One of the aspects of the Seder that actually has a great deal of discussion about it in the Talmud is the issue of Kodesh. I think by that stage in the Haggadah, we just do whatever we're told. The instruction says to eat them separately and then eat them together, we do it. What is the background to the famous Korech, otherwise known as the Hillel sandwich? Well, the Talmud tells us in Maseches Psochim and Daf Kuftes Vav Amud Aleph as follows. Amru Alav al Hillel. They said about Hillel, there were a number of Hillels, but this is the original Hillel, yet in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Shehaya Korchon Bevas Achas Ve'ochlan. He would wrap them all together, Korech, and eat them. Shene Emar, as the Pasuk says, Al Matzos Umeroim Yochaluvu. To eat it, the Pesach, together with matzah and maror. Now, Hillel had that practice, but his colleagues disputed it. Whereas Hillel would have them together, his chaverim, the other rabbis, would eat them separately. And what is the basis of this dispute? The pasuk says, "Amatzos umeroim yochaluhu." How is there room for a difference of interpretation? Well, as the Gemara and Mefarshim explain, really, the word yochaluhu is in the singular. So the question ultimately is, as the Pasuk, is referring first and foremost to the Korban Pesach, do we say that the word Yochaluhu is in the singular to indicate that each one should be eaten separately? As much as there are three items mentioned in the Pasuk, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, but Yochaluhu at the end of the day means each one eaten by itself, one by one. That seems to be the opinion of the Chachamim. That's what they make of the use of the singular. Whereas Hillel understands, and it's important for the Parshanut, that Yochaluhu, the use of the singular, is because ultimately the object here of the sentence is the Korban Pesach, eaten together with matzah and maror. But it takes the form of a korech. It's important to note, and the Talmud itself points this out, that as much as there exists a dispute between Hillel and the Chachamim how to eat your matzah and maror separately or together, that dispute only exists in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. But nowadays, the way the Seder that we have, even Hillel concurs that the matzah needs to be eaten separately. Why? Well, important to note that as much as matzah and maror are both mitzvahs on a Torah level, of course, they're mentioned in the Pasuk. Nonetheless, one of them is only a mitzvah if it's eaten together with the Korban Pesach, if there is a Korban Pesach in the time of the Korban Pesach, namely Maror. We've only ever seen the Torah give a mitzvah of Maror in conjunction with the Korban Pesach. And the inference is very clear that if there is no Korban Pesach, there is no mitzvah of Maror. And that remains true. Even our eating of Maror nowadays is a rabbinic mitzvah, zecher, to the mitzvah of Maror. But there is no Torah mitzvah of Maror if there's no Torah mitzvah of Korban Pesach. That would have also been true with regards to the matzah, were it not for the fact that elsewhere the Torah devotes a pasuk specifically to matzah, ba'erev tochlu matzos, indicating that the mitzvah of matzah is not limited to the time of the Korban Pesach. Nowadays, it turns out, there are only, of those two foods, only one of them is on a mitzvah on a Torah level, namely matzah. The two Torah-level mitzvahs of Seder night are the telling of the story, Vigalta Levincha, and the mitzvah of matzah, that first kezias, which is why people are very particular about it. And they may eat more than what would normally be considered a kezias, because it's a Torah-level mitzvah, be'erev toflu matzah. Since that is the case, matzah and maror are no longer of equivalent status, for matzah is a Torah mitzvah and maror is a drabbanon mitzvah. There exists a principle in halacha that you can never have two mitzvahs together if they're not of the same level, because the lesser, quote-unquote, the lesser level will interfere or represent a disruption for the higher level mitzvah. If you wish to have two mitzvah foods together, they have to be an equivalent level. They have to be both on a Torah level or both on a Drabbanon level. But if your matzah is a mitzvah on a Torah level and the Rabbanon is no longer or temporarily not that way, in the words of the Talmud, mitzvos mevatlos zuasu, the one mitzvah would disrupt the other, which means even Hillel nowadays, if he was at our Seder, he would not have matzah and morah together for his mitzvah. And that is why, important to note, when we have the korech, we do not say we are having the korech to satisfy the opinion of Hillel. We do not say this is Hillel. We say, zecher lemikdash kehillel. This is what Hillel would do in the time of the mikdash, but not what Hillel would do nowadays, because the matzah is on a Torah level, the maror is on a drabbanon level. Okay. And therefore, our course is, first we have them separately, in which case we've satisfied all opinions. Even Hillel would require the matzah separately. Rabbanon would always have both of them separately. And then we go for the korech. Zecher lemikdash kehillel. There are one or two interesting questions, perhaps not so well known, that are discussed by the commentators. Firstly, korech. He would make a sandwich. He would put them together. What would he put together? Our intuition, perhaps, is he would put all of them together. Pesach, matzah, and maror, those three foods, they would represent the korech sandwich. And indeed, there are Rishonim who explain that way. The Rashbam, in his commentary to Maseches Pesachim, says he would put together Pesach, matzah, and maror. It's most interesting to note that the Rambam, in Hilchos Chametz Matzah, when he describes how the Korban Pesach was eaten, even with reference to Hillel's view, he says that one eats the Korban Pesach by itself and then has matzah and maror together. For Rambam, even Hillel, even at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, is not putting Pesach, matzah, and maror together. The korech exists of matzah and maror. The Pesach was yet eaten by itself. And it relates to how exactly to understand the nuances of the psukim. And for us, you will find in our nusach of Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel, you'll find two versions in our Haggadahs. For we say, Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel, Kein Asa Hillel Bizman Shebeis HaMikdash Hayakayim. This is what he would do. Hayakorech, he would wrap together, and now there are two versions. Some versions say, Hayakorech, Pesach Matzah Umarar. Other versions say, Hayakorech, Matzah Umarar. And so the third version has the word Pesach in brackets. So you can really consult your Rishonim and then decide whether you wish to say the word Pesach in the formula. The Gemara, which is the source of Hillel's practice, in a sense is slightly open-ended. For the words are, Amru alav al Hillel shahaya korchon bevas achas. He would put them together. Who are them? What are them? Are they Pesach Matzah and Maror, or are they Matzah and Maror? And that remains a machlokus rishonim, as we said, with reverberations for the nusach, for us in terms of our zeichel mikdash kehila. Another very interesting question with regards to the korech is, how exactly does the korech look? What was the makeup of the korech? So how was it arranged? I mention this because it's clear to us that even just with matzah and maror, that because we're used to a sandwich. So the matzah goes on the outside, and inside is the maror. In fact, there's been some discussion recently, which is, it's part of Minag Ashkenaz, that matzahs are always hard and crunchy. They're not pliable, or shouldn't be. So we never really get the full korech effect. For actually, the word korech means to wrap something around. Like tzitzis, when the thread is wrapped around, those are called krichos. And with tefillin, when one wraps around the arm, that's called krichos. That's korech. We have no choice, in a sense. We take the matzah, you break it in half, and you put one layer underneath, one layer on top, never the twain shall meet. But then that's not really wrapping around. That's on top and on the bottom. Okay. Of course, one of the bonuses of being a Yemenite is if you know how to make matzah, and you know that it is matzah, so then you're able to wrap it round. Okay? That doesn't mean that's recommended for Ashkenazim. But what is fascinating is the Gemara, again, gives us... What is the terminology? Amar alav ahil hazaken, shahaya korchan bevasachas. He would wrap them together. How did he do that? The Gemara doesn't say. One of the primary commentators, one of the first commentators on the Gemara, is Rabbeinu Chananel. He's of the earliest of the Rishonim. And his words are most illuminating. Says Rabbeinu Chananel, Amru alav al Hillel, they said regarding Hillel, Shahaya korech hamaror al hamatzah. He would wrap the maror around the matzah. The ochlo bevas achas, and eat it together. So as the Gemara said, he would wrap them together, but we don't know which was the wrapper and which was the enwrapped. But the Rabbeinu Chananel says that he would wrap the maror around the matzah. We no longer have any indication as to what the consistency of matzah should be like, because even if it's hard like our matzah or brittle like our matzahs, you can still wrap around. The only evidence we now have is that Hillel probably did not use grated horseradish for maror, because you can't wrap that around anything. But if it's lettuce, and that's really that's the mitzvah min hamubcha, assuming that it's insect-free and etc. and so forth. So the korecha looks quite different. I've never seen anyone do this, to try the korecha according to Rabbeinu Chananel, but it's certainly he is of the most major sources with regards to anything that he comments on, and that's korecha according to Rabbeinu Chananel. Now, the Shulchan Aruch, as he gives us his presentation of korech, states as follows. This is in Simen Taf Ayin Hey of Orach Chaim, Seif Aleph. Notal matzah shlishis. The korech is done by the third matzah. The top two are for motzi and for matzah. The third one got jettisoned halfway through motzi and matzah, but then it comes back for korech. One takes the bottom matzah, uvotzea mimeno. He takes pieces from it, v'korech im hamoror, and he wraps it with the moror. Okay. The Omer, the Ramah has an insertion, but then the Shulchan Aruch continues. The Omer zeichel lemikdash kehila, and he says zeichel lemikdash kehila. So the nusach for the Shulchan Aruch is very concise, just those three words zeichel lemikdash kehila. Our nusach is longer; we have three lines. Kenasa hilal bezman shebisa mikdash kaim. That's really not from the Shulchan Aruch. The ochlan biyachad, and one eats them together beheseber, reclining. Now, the Shulchan Aruch does mention, and important to note, one should do this, Umisheberach alachilas matzah, from the time that one has made the bracha on the matzah, hamotzi, and then alachilas matzah, lo yasiach, one should not converse, bedavar she'enu me'inyin hasudah, things that are not relevant to what is happening now, ad sheyocha krichazo, until one eats the korech, kedei shetala birchas achilas matzah ubirchas achilas maror gam lekrichazo, so that the brachos that one makes, after all, first one is having the matzah and the maror separately, and then one is having them together. Although it's a zecher lemigdash, as we mentioned before, it is ideal that the bracha should also cover the korech, and to that end, as we know, one should never interrupt with unrelated matters between the bracha and the mitzvah. So here, primarily, the mitzvah has been fulfilled through the matzah and the maror separately, but as an added measure, one should maintain focus until one has eaten the korech. So all the instructions as to how long one has and how exactly to do things should actually be done before rachza, so that everyone knows exactly what they're doing no one needs to interrupt, certainly with things that are unrelated. Now, there is a famous comment in light of this, made by the Mishnah Brura in the Bir Halacha. The Bir Halacha is where he expands on certain topics more. And he takes exception, actually, to the Shulchan Aruch's formulation that before you have the Korech, you say, Zecher le Mikdash Kehila. After all, says the Mishnah Berurah, this is the Chafetz Chaim, that's unnecessary. The Shulchan Aruch himself has told us that one should not interrupt with things that are not necessary for what is happening. This is not necessary. It's not off topic. I mean, you are describing what you're doing. That doesn't make it necessary. It's a very interesting distinction between litzorich, required, and me'inyan. It's on topic, quite so. But really, in order to justify between the bracha and the mitzvah, it's not enough that it's on topic. It's got to be somehow serving some purpose. After all, if we could imagine, just I think to illustrate what the Shulchan Aruch is saying, what the Mishnah Berurah is saying, if a person made a bracha hamotzi on Friday night, hamotzi lechem in aretz, and before he ate any challah, he began a discourse on what he's about to do. This is the first of the three mitzvahs of Shabbos. There, it's a mitzvah on a drabbanon level. It's very important, and it's all true, and it's not irrelevant, but it's also not required, and therefore it's not okay. One doesn't interrupt for things like this. And the Shulchan Aruch himself has told us later on not to interrupt with this sorts of thing. And therefore, says Mishnah Berurah, I wonder whether the Shulchan Aruch, number one, he meant to say it beforehand. It's possible that he tells you that one should say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillah. It doesn't mean before you eat. Perhaps first you should have the Korach and then say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillah. That's one possibility. And maybe even, says the Mishnah Berurah, the Shulchan Aruch didn't mean that you should say it, but rather, this is Zecher LeMikdash Kehillah. The final conclusion or recommendation of the Bir Halacha, actually, is not to say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillah before eating the Korach, but rather have the Korach, make sure that the connection and the cohesion between the Brachos and the Korach is preserved. And then after you have the courage, you can say what you want. Then that's the time to say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillah. That's quite a recommendation. And there were certain Gedolim who acted in accordance with this recommendation. The Minog, however, is not like that. The Minog is to say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillah beforehand, any Haggadah that you, unless it's the Mishnah Berurah Haggadah, any Haggadah that you pick up will have this formula beforehand. Now, there are certain Mefarshim who take issue with the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah said that this formula to state Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel is not found in the words of the Rishonim. Well, Rabbi Avadya Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, takes up this issue in his Sefer Chazon Avadya, which is two volumes about Seder night. I think it's one of the first things that he published in the 50s, early 50s. And of course, if you ever want to say that no Rishonim mention this, you have to be sure before you speak to Rabbi Avadya Yosef. Because if there's anyone who ever said it, he will know. And therefore, Rabbi Avadya begins by saying that the Mishnah Berurah said that it's not mentioned anywhere in the Rishonim, but before you look around, Rabbi Avadya has taken out Rishonim from all over the place, that clearly the Mishnah Berurah had no access to. And it is mentioned. Interestingly, it's mentioned in the Ramaz commentary on the Torah called Darkei Moshe. He quotes it in the name of Rishonim. And this gave rise to an interesting theory, because Rabbi Yosef Kara never spoke about it in his Beis Yosef, but the Ramah spoke about it in his commentary on the Torah. And the theory was that just before these words in Shulchan Aruch, V'omer Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel, you have a comment of the Ramah. Someone suggested that actually these words, V'omer Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel, are still the words of the Ramah. We think that they were said by the Shulchan Aruch because whatever is written in square print is in the Shulchan Aruch and whatever is in Rashi script is the Ramah, but that's the only indication that we have of who is talking. Could it be, suggested one Chacham, we know that the Ramah has mentioned this earlier, that these are still a continuation of the words of the Ramah and the printers, when in doubt, it's the printers. So they were the ones, they took the words of the Ramah, they thought it's the Shulchan Aruch again, they put it into square print, they upgraded it, well, depending, from Rashi script to square print, and now we think it's the Shulchan Aruch, and now we're in confusion, but maybe it's really the Ramah, and all is resolved. Says Rabbi Avadya Yosef, that's a very interesting idea, and it's not true. How do I know it's not true? Anything is possible, not this. Because, says Rabbi Avadya, I had the privilege of seeing an edition of the Shulchan Aruch that was printed in the 1500s before the Rama had added his comments. So it's just Shulchan Aruch. Not square print, not Rashi print, it's just Shulchan Aruch. And these words are there. Which means there is no doubt that this is actually from the Shulchan Aruch. And sometimes it happens that things that were not mentioned earlier in the Beis Yosef by Rabbi Yosef Karo will be formulated in the Shulchan Aruch. But this is not the Rama. This is the Shulchan Aruch. Now, the minhag, as we said, is to say it. And an explanation as to why we say it, in response to the Mishnah Berurah saying, it's not really necessary, it's not really doing anything. It's describing, but it's not doing. Well, Rabbi Yosef Engel, in his notes to Maseches Megillah, what's called Gilyonei HaShas in Megillah, Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, he refers us to the Chidushim of the Marsha in Bava Basra in Daf Samach Amud Beis. And the Marsha there says as follows. These are the final lines of the third parak of Bava Basra, Cheskas Abatim, and they talk about the concept of Zecher LeMikdash. And that's where it says that one should leave part of the house not fully done in terms of plastered, and one should leave something. Actually, the Gemara says one should always leave a little bit from a meal, not to finish the meal. Zecher leChurban. All these things, Zecher leChurban. For us, we break the glass. Right? Zecher leChurban. Now, all of this is in reference to, or sourced in the pasuk, Imeshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. So if a person forgets Yerushalayim, so they should never do anything properly. Then the Yemin represents for those who are right-handed doing things properly. But then, says the Marsha, we, as we know, the verse continues. Tidbak l'shoni l'chiki im lo eskerechi. Right, my tongue should cleave to my palate if I don't mention you. What is the meaning of this second half of the pasuk? Says Marsha, this tells us that when it comes to matters of Zecher leChurban, it's not enough to do things. One has to talk about it. It's not enough that to get over the Tishkach Yemini. I did the right thing. I left some food over. I left a portion of the house not fully plastered or painted. That's not enough. The second part is you have to talk about it. And the reason why, says the Marsha, is because it's possible to either lose consciousness or maybe never really to know what's behind all these things. If a person leaves food over from a meal, it could be for many reasons. It could be for dietary reasons. It could be for that they're just not hungry anymore. And no one will ever really know that it's because, no, we're missing the Beis HaMikdash. That's why I'm not... There could be any number of reasons why the house never gets fully furnished. It could be financial. It could be art nowadays. So, if one doesn't talk about it, the point, even if one does everything correctly, but never expresses it and explains it, there's something missing. Tishkach Yemini is one section, but it's not complete. The Zecher is not complete without Tidbak L'Shon L'Chikim Im Lo Eskerechi to talk about it. So says the Marsha, which is very interesting. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel in the Gilyonei HaShas in Megillah. So what we see is when it comes to matters of Zecher LeChurban, talking about it, and Zecher LeMikdash and Zecher LeChurban, they're really two sides of the same coin, because even Zecher LeMikdash is to remember what was, in because we don't have it anymore, and we're aspiring to get back there again. Zecher LeMikdash, in a sense, is the Yom Tovdika way of saying Zecher LeChurban. But it's the same concept. So now, says Rabbi Yosef Engel, I think we understand why the minhag is to say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel beforehand. The concern was, it's not really necessary, it's not doing anything. Well, with other mitzvahs, describing the mitzvah doesn't necessarily add. But as we have seen, there is an active value, an integral value of talking about the Zecher LeMikdash. That's part of the mitzvah. So to say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel is as important as actually eating the korech, and it's not an interruption, and it's not unnecessary. And this, perhaps, is the reason why the widespread minhag is to say it beforehand. It's not considered a hefsek. That's the minhag. It actually, one begins to wonder, therefore, and this is a question that I don't have a full resolution for, but it happens a lot on Seder tonight. There's many things that we do that are Zecher LeMikdash. We eat the Afikoman Zecher for the Korban Pesach. But we don't talk about it. And that's an interesting question. when most people eat the afikoman, I'm not sure, are they thinking this is eicher for the Korban Pesach? Maybe they are. Maybe they're thinking other things. But regardless, there's no paragraph in the Haggadah which says this is a eicher for the Korban Pesach, at least not in most editions of the Haggadah. So that now becomes an interesting question for our consideration. When does the Zeicher LeMikdash get accompanied by a formula of introduction, and when does it not? And we're just left to understand what it represents. The final very interesting question with regards to the Korach, and specifically the formula that we say, so if we know that the Nusach, Zeicher LeMikdash Kehillel, Hillel used to do this, Haya Korach, either Pesach or Matzah and Maror, together, Lekayim Asher Ne'emar, Al Matzah Sumerorim Yochaluhu. Okay, and that's a verse from the Torah. If you know where that verse comes from, there's a bit of a shaila here. That verse, Al Matzah Sumerorim Yochaluhu, is not the first time the Torah has told us to eat the Korban Pesach with matzah and maror. Moreover, not only is it not the first time, it's not even talking about Pesach. The words al matzah zomerim yocheluhu are a quotation from Bamidbar Perek Tes, which is talking about Pesach Sheni. Now the Torah does speak about it for the first Pesach, back in Parshas Bo, that's in Shmos Perek Yud Beis. But the words are va'achlu es habasar balayla hazeh, to eat the meat of the Pesach on this night, tzili eish umatzos, roasted with matzos, al mirarum yochaluhu. That is the formula. Those are the words of the pasuk talking about Pesach. So that's an interesting question with regards to our formula. Why do we quote the pasuk that isn't really talking about the Korban Pesach, but rather about Pesach Sheni? Why don't we quote the original pasuk? The truth is, if you look into the Gemara itself, it's already a discussion. But the popular discussion is with regards to the Nusach of the Haggadah, and there's a famous explanation given in the name of Rabbi Yeshua of Belz. And he says the reason why we quote a pasuk from Pesach Sheni, it's a very Hasidic word, but Zecher leMikdash, to remember the Mikdash, is because we're looking forward to the Mikdash. Looking forward to the Mikdash means, if a person is on Seder night and they're eating Korech, that means they don't have the Mikdash yet. They don't want to wait till next year till they have the Korech. They're hoping for it next month. So the Pasuk of Pesach Sheni is itself, it is already a forward-looking tefillah. It's a Zecher, but part of it is a tefillah saying, and in the merit of this, let's hope that we ourselves will fulfill Lekaye Mashenemar Amatzos Semerim Yechalu this year in a month's time for Pesach Sheni. That's the famous explanation of Rabbi Shmuel Belz. So these are some of the highlights and aspects of the mitzvah of Korach. The rest, of course, will be found in any good edition of the Haggadah. So now let us turn our attention to some aspects of Maggid. So, quite soon into Maggid, we have the famous four sons, and we begin with Baruch HaMakom, the four sections, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shnasantur Lam Yisrael, Baruch Hu. And Mefarshim discuss, what is behind this introduction, what is it doing? It is an introduction of sorts. Some say it's almost like Birchas HaTorah, in a way. We're about to begin discussing passages of Torah. Of course, one has already made Birchas HaTorah, certainly that morning, but it's very much a Torah-based evening, and therefore it has its own special type of Birchas HaTorah just before the exposition. Baruch Shanasan Torah La'am Yisrael Baruch Hu. That said, we note that it is rather long. I mean, it's got four sections to it. We do not begin by saying Baruch Shenasan Torah La'am Yisrael, but rather Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, and then Baruch Shenasan Torah. What is the exact breakdown of the phrases of Baruch HaMakom? And the Vilna Gaon discusses this in his Perush to the Haggadah, and he gives two explanations, and each one is gives us great insight, of course, by itself, certainly the two combined together. Actually, in the morning, we also have another form of set of brachos. Before we say the Shema, there are two brachos, in the morning and the evening, actually. And when you think about it, the first one, both in the morning and the evening, it's more about the world in general. It's about Hashem having created the world, the natural running of the world. Yotzer or v'rechoshech, everything goes. Hamechadish betuva b'chol yom tovin ma'aseh bereishis. And it really, the first bracha, and similarly in the evening, Asher b'dvar ma'ariv ha'rovim, it's about how time goes and how the world keeps going, how Hashem runs the world. The first of the pre-Shema brachos is about the world. The second of the pre-Shema brachos is about Torah. It's already about the unique destiny of the Jewish people and Torah. And thus, in the morning, v'sein b'libeinu, l'havinu l'haskil, allow us to understand the Torah, v'horei neinu b'sarasecha. It's moved from the world generally to Torah specifically. And similarly, in the evening, the second bracha, avas olam, Torah u mitzvos, chukum u mishpatim, nasiach b'chukecha. And actually what's happening is, the second bracha is building on the first. Whereas the first recognizes Hashem as creator of the world generally, that's the platform, upon which we add the second bracha, which is about our experience in the world, specifically, the Jewish people. Says the Gaon, that pattern is followed here in Baruch HaMakom. You have your first bracha and your second bracha. The first bracha, Baruch HaMakom, it really corresponds to the opening bracha before Shema, because it's that makom literally means space. When we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as HaMakom, we're referring to him as the creator of space and everything that fills it. So Baruch HaMakom is like the Yotzer HaMa'oros. It's about Hashem as creator of the natural world. And from there, we move into the second bracha of Baruch Shanosan Torah L'Amo Yisrael, which corresponds to the second bracha before Shema. So it exactly has that template and that introductory aspect of those two brachas. That's the first explanation of the Gaon. So it's fascinating because it happens very quickly. I mean, these are literally two words each, some of them. But nonetheless, they contain within them these two levels, these two spheres, the world generally, and Torah and the Jewish people specifically. There is another explanation of the Gaon, and I think it really sets the atmosphere for Seder night, for us for sure. The Talmud tells us, we know that the Beis HaMikdash, that is the repository of the Divine Presence, that's where it is most keenly felt, and now we don't have it. Says the Gemara in Maseches Brachos and Daf Ches Amud Aleph, Miyom Shechara Beis HaMikdash, from the time the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, Ein lo l'Kadosh Baruch Hu ba'olamo ela arba amas shel halacha bilvat. The place where Hashem chooses to be is the four amas of halacha. As if to say that, and it's a fascinating way of looking at Torah. I mean, the Beis HaMikdash is a place, and there's no substitute for the Beis HaMikdash as that place. Torah knows their place. But as soon as a person is engaged in Torah, in trying to work out the divine will, arba amas shel halacha, so he's meeting the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is there. It knows no borders, no limitations, not in time and not in space. And that's why it's localized and centralized when the Beis HaMikdash is there. And when it isn't, it's wherever people are learning Torah. Says the Vilna Gaon, Baruch HaMakom in this interpretation refers, HaMakom, the place, refers to the Makom of the Beis HaMikdash. And then we say, Baruch Hu, blessed is he who resides there. But in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, so where does he reside? Baruch Shenosan Torah L'Am Yisrael, Baruch Hu. That's where he will be found, in the Torah that he gave to the Jewish people. And really, what we're doing is we're setting the tone, especially as on Seder night, we miss the Beis HaMikdash. If we have a sense of what a Seder should look like, as we spoke about last week, and the Korban Pesach is the center of everything, and it's missing. It is missing. And it's important to note that it's missing. And that's really what Halach Ma'anya is about. It's the first thing we say in the Seder. in a sense, Baruch HaMakom is the counterpoint to that. For as important as it is to realize what we're missing, because if we don't miss it, we don't have that much chance of looking forward to it, it's also important to appreciate what we have. And in the meanwhile, where the Shekhinah is not localized in the Beis HaMikdash, it's in the Torah that we're about to talk about. And therefore, we bring almost some of the atmosphere of the Beis HaMikdash into the Seder table as we're about to focus around the Divrei Torah of Magid. This is the introduction to the four sons, and there are connections and correlations between the four phrases of Baruch HaMakom and the four sons. I'd like to talk about the second of the four sons. For some reason, he always gets the lion's share of attention. He's the Ben Rasha. Because the approach of the Haggadah to him is so unusual, it really needs to be understood properly. So what does he say? He doesn't waste time with his words. Ma ha'avodah hazos lachem. What's this all about? And we say, of course, lachem. He barbs his question, meaning lachem v'lo. For you, not for me. That's really what marks it out. Okay, and we're already on guard. We've already quarantined him. That's not a good question. Ma avodah zos lachem. You know, Mefarshim raised the question. The Chacham didn't seem to ask his question too differently. After all, what does the Chacham ask? Ma ha'edos, v'chukim, v'mishpatim, ha'shetziv ha'shem l'keinu eschem? Now, if we were alert to the inference, we should already have noted, Eschem, you, Eschem, below Oso, but we let it pass. How come the Chacham gets a pass? Or more correctly, how do we know that that really is a question of a Chacham, whereas grammatically, Eschem velo Oso is like Lechem velo Lo? What differentiates the Chacham from the Rasha? Well, the simple answer, which is given by Mefarshim, is that the Chacham clearly doesn't mean to exclude himself because he has referred to Hashem as Hashem Elokeinu. So he's in. One yet needs to work out why he says Eschem, but he's in. Hashem Elokeinu. The Rasha doesn't show any affinity, doesn't show any sense of connectedness. Mo havodah zos lachem. There's no Hashem Elokeinu, but the Chacham said Hashetziv Hashem Elokeinu Eschem. So he is together with us. He just wants to know. But nonetheless, the question persists. So if he's so kosher, so why is he saying something that sounds not so on level? Eschem, below Oso. How does that fit together with the general kosherness of his question? So the Malbim Haggadah, which is probably, or at least possibly, not written by the Malbim himself, someone took on to, he felt the Jewish people needed a Haggadah in the style of the Malbim, and wrote it, and did a fantastic job. And that's why it's really more accurately referred to as the Malbim Haggadah. It is the Malbim Haggadah. Whether the Malbim wrote it is another question. But the Malbim Haggadah points out that really the difference is between the two words, Lachem and Eschem. You see, Eschem means to you. Lachem means for you. Now the truth is that contextually, certainly, the Chacham is entitled to say Eschem. Because in context, this Chacham is the second generation after that which received the Torah. So the first generation were commanded to receive the Torah. It was said to them, to the first generation, for all generations. So as the second generation child says, what's behind all the mitzvahs? Asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu Eschem, that's absolutely accurate. Hashem said it to you. Of course, it's for me as well, but he said it to you. I'd like to know what it's all about. So there's nothing untoward about that question at all. The Rasha, in contrast, he doesn't talk about who it's said for. His implication is who it is for. Ma havodah hazos lochem. What's this avodah for you? Meaning it's for you and not for me. That's already Hosea's Asrim in that class. Well, how do we respond? He's the Rasha, everyone knows. Hakei Eshinov, you've got to blunt his teeth, you've got to read him the riot act, and put him in his place. He said, Ma avodos os lachem? So we respond in kind. Ba'avodze osa Hashem li b'seisi mi mitzrayim. Li, it's a similar language. We also speak in inferences. Li, v'lo lo, me, and not for him. Ilu hayasham lo hayanigo. And he's been dealt with decisively. Of course, we need to understand why are we taking such a hard line with this Ben Russia. And I think the most important part of this question is when we relate to, perhaps we relate to the Haggadah's harsh treatment of the Ben Russia, because we imagine that it's talking about someone else's child. It's the Haggadah's child. It's the nameless, faceless person in the Haggadah's Russia child. I have no lack of harsh responses for him. But this is what the Torah is telling each person to tell their child. If it's my child, I don't really relate to him in that way. Very often, two children can be doing exactly the same thing, getting up to exactly the same mischief. The question as to whether they're branded as Rishoyim or Mazikim or adorable children is purely a function as to whether it's my child or my neighbor's child. But it's my child. So all of a sudden, I'm not so comfortable, Hakeyes Shinov. After all, a parent has some obligation of chinuch, that this seems to be rather abrupt. So an approach which for a number of years already for me is the way forward with the Ben Russia is based on the writings of Reb Shmuel David Volkin, Zatzal. He is the father of my Rebbe, Reb Chaim Volkin, Yibad L'chaim. And he explains, Hakei es Shinov, what's behind this rather enigmatic phrase, you blunt his teeth. The teeth of a Russia, they represent the external expression of his speech. As surely as when he opens his mouth, those are his fangs. The shinantom it refers to expressing something, the way he enunciated. The first rule in terms of how to relate to the Russia, and by the way, according to a number of Mepharshim, we're talking about young children. So he's not a confirmed criminal. He's a young child. Where does this question come from? And what does it say about him? That's the most important question. Where does it come from? It could come from anywhere. It could come from something he heard, overheard. Maybe he wants to see how the type of reaction it will provoke. He's just testing boundaries. Many, many things are possible. The worst thing to do is to immediately identify him as a person with his teeth, which are this very edgy, dangerous sounding question. And that's why the advice of the Baal HaGadah is Hakei es Shinov. You've got to blunt the teeth. In other words, you've got to reach past the teeth. Knock them out. Because as long as they're there, you may run the risk of defining the essence of your child by the length of his fangs. So get rid of that and address him. Now, he needs to be addressed, quite so. But not as the problem. Not as a criminal child. Should mention, there is a sefer called Hegyone Halacha. He refers to a gematria. He didn't source it, and I actually called him up because people were asking me as soon as I started quoting it, and he told me he didn't know where it was from. But then to his credit that he gave me more time, he phoned back later on. He searched in his notes, and he found it. And it's in a sefer called Avas Olam from hundreds of years ago. And these are the old school gematrias where they still meant something. Not the homespun variety of nowadays. This child is called a Ben Russia. The word Russia, Resh, Shin, and Ayin, has a collective gematria of 570. The advice or the approach given by the Baal HaGadah is you got to knock out his teeth. Hakei es Shinov, Shin, Nun, Yud, Vav. Do the math at your leisure. But Shinov has a gematria of 366. If you take a Ben Russia, 570, and you knock out Shinov, you knock out the 366, 570 minus 366 is 204, and that's the gematria of the word tzaddik. And that is what one is hoping to be left with. That's the point. He is a tzaddik. He looks like a Rasha because he's a tzaddik with fangs. Get rid of the fangs, he's back a tzaddik. And I think this will explain to us, one has to answer him pointedly, really. He has to know there are consequences to actions, there are consequences to statements. Quite so. But the goal is to divest him of those notions. Perhaps he should be keeping better company. Perhaps he should think again before he asks his next question. At least consider that the speech is not always free. But that's the goal. In fact, I believe one may say that this approach is firstly explicit in the words of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says in his Perush Meitiv Nagen to Haggadah Shel Pesach that the four expressions, Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenasan Torah L'Am Yisrael, Baruch Hu, they correspond to the four sons, and the second and the fourth, which are very, in a sense, diverted, Baruch Hu, they're not really, constricted and hidden, because they refer to the two sons who aren't really that interested, so they're not very expressive. But we give brachas for all of the four children. And the reason why, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, is because the Torah has given us a response to all of them in order to help them, in order to be makariv them. That means even the goal of the Ben Rasha is to be makariv him. I came across in the commentary of Rav Shlomo Kluger, he has two commentaries in the Haggadah, Yirias Shlomo is this one. He has a wonderful comment. It says, there's four sons, Keneged Abar Bonim Dibra Torah. Echad Rasha, Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, Echad Tam, Echad Jihei Niyud Elishah. And Rav Shlomo Kluger asked an interesting question. If there's four sons, so I know that 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 is 4. Why do we have to say one of them is a Chacham, one of them is a Rasha? Just say there's four sons, Keneged Abar Bonim Dibra Torah, Chacham, Rasha, Tam, Niyud Elishah. That's how we would say it in English. But it's twice as long now. Echad Chacham. One of them is a Chacham. One of them is a Rasha. What's that word Echad doing? It says Reb Shlomo Kluger, if you're familiar with the parlance of Chazal, so we understand that whenever there's a number of entities, and the Gemara or the Mishnah will say Echad this and Echad that, it doesn't mean one is this and one is that. It means whether this, whether that. Echad Tam, Echad Muad. Whether it's this or whether it's that. It's a different orientation now. It's not arithmetic now. But rather, it's saying there's four sons. And they all need to be addressed. Whether he's a Chacham, Echad Chacham. Whether he's a Rasha, Echad Rasha. Whether he's a Tam, whether any Delishon. Because one could easily come up with a reason to avoid talking to any of them. Very, very, very quickly. The Chacham doesn't really need my help. I mean, he seems to have worked it out on itself, so he doesn't need to get my time. The Rasha, Chaval al Azman. The Tam, how much can I tell him already? And then he did all the shells, not even interested. And before you look around, you're not talking to anyone. And the Haggadah says, no, don't ignore all of them. Engage all of them. Whether he's a Chacham, he still needs a guiding hand. He still needs aspects of the story. And whether he's a Rasha, you never know. And if he's a Tam, he still deserves your time. If it's on a simple level, so be it. And if he's a Nidhi Elishol, he certainly needs someone to talk to him. So it's a completely different orientation from the word Echad. That's the power of one. So to return to the Ben Rasha, one does need to speak to him rather harshly. But the end goal has to be not to castigate him, but in order to perhaps shake him up a little bit, and who knows, maybe it will help, but it's got to be, the stress has to be accompanied by support. And I believe that's embedded really in the Pasuk's introduction. For these words, Bavrozeh Os Hashem Li B'Tzeisi Mimitzrayim. Begin with the words, V'higadeta Levincha Bayomahu Lemor. As we know, it's the most often quoted Pasuk with regards to telling the story. Now the two verbs in the Pasuk, V'higadeta and Lemor, have different connotations. If we know from Rashi and Parshas Yisro, Haggadah in the Torah means things that are tough. Koshim kigidim, the taged of Yisrael. Lemor has a much more pleasant connotation. Amira raka. So now it says in the Pasuk, both of them, Higadata and Lemor. Which is it? Is it tough? Is it nice? But I think what we have before us is a vector. V'higadata levincha, for this type of child, you may need to speak to him in a tough way. But to what end? With what goal in mind? Where is the Haggadah taking you? Lemor. The goal should be to bring to it to a pleasant conclusion, to a positive conclusion. That's really the explanation of our approach to the Ben Rasha. And that, I believe, may be a very simple explanation to one of the famous questions with regards to the Ben Rasha. He said, Ma avodah zos lachem. What's it to you? For you, lachem v'lalo. And we respond similarly, Ba'avorzeh os Hashem li b'tzeisim mimitzrayim. For me and not, li v'lo, lo. Me and not him. So the Mepharshim say, well, if you're talking to him, it should have said, li v'lo lacha. Say to him, li v'lo lacha. So some Mepharshim say, well, you shouldn't be talking to Rishayim. But so you should kind of turn to the wall and hopefully it will rebound to him. But the Magid says, Hake Eshinov ve'emor lo, and say to him. It really sounds like you are saying to him. And once again, he's your child. So why would you say, if you're talking to him in the second person, why would you say in the third person, li v'lo lo? Based on the words of Rabbi Volkan, I think we understand very well. You can never tell him that he wouldn't have been redeemed. That's the whole point. You can never address the child and say, you wouldn't have been redeemed. Because you're looking to divest him of these notions that are getting in the way. Whoever told you this would have had issues. But that's not you. And therefore, leave a low, low. Whatever the source of this question is, be aware of the company that you keep. They may have been people that would have stayed in Mitzrayim. You, of course, would have come out. You just need to have a bit of a think about these things. That's why it's leave a low, low, and never leave a low, low. A final point, which is really fascinating, is again to pay attention to the words of the Magid. I mean, these are from words from Chazal. The pasuk is Ba'avorzeh os Hashem li b'tzeisi mimitzrayim. This is what Hashem did for me when I left Mitzrayim. Li v'lo lo, whoever he is. Ilu hayasham lo hayanigal. He wouldn't have been redeemed. It's very interesting to note, the verb of the inference has changed. For the verse, the pasuk talks about Ba'avorzeh os Hashem li b'tzeisi mimitzrayim. When I left Mitzrayim, if we're saying me and not him, then if when I left, but not him, ilo hayasham, lo haya yotze. That's the inference. But actually the term shifts as we go from me to him, betseisi becomes inferred as lo haya nigal. Where did the word geula come from? That's a good shaila. That's the question of Rabbi Yaakov Milisa in his perush, classic perush, Ma'aseh Nisim to the Haggadah. And the Ma'aseh Nisim explains, the issue of the child, really, is that he can't reconcile celebrating freedom with performing commandments. At the root, he's saying, everyone's free, and that's the night of our freedom, and we're surrounded by mitzvahs. Moha voda zos lachem, if you're free, why are you involved in why are you serving if you're free? And the sad part of that question is, it's completely missed the essence of what leaving Mitzrayim was about. It's taken Yetzias Mitzrayim from a positive direction to a negative direction. And by that we mean from a positive direction as to when we left Mitzrayim, where did we go to? As opposed to having left Mitzrayim, we're nowhere, we're just not there. But that's a negative definition of freedom, just not slaves. But then we're not anything. And of course, the goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to bring us to a higher plane, not just to leave us nowhere. And that's really at the center of Seder night. And therefore, that's really the disconnect of the child. He doesn't yet appreciate that if you're free, why doesn't that mean that you don't have to do anything? He's happy to leave Mitzrayim, but and then into these mitzvahs. That's the term of geula. Geula in Torah is used as something that changes jurisdiction. If someone's field is mortgaged in Parshas Bechukosai, and then he redeems it, he reclaims it. It shifts ownership from current to actual, to ultimate. That's called geula, lo yimacher v'lo yigael. The geula of the Jewish people means that we've shifted ownership, we've shifted jurisdiction. That's really what Yetzias Mitzrayim is about. Or to put it slightly differently, the Russia sees freedom as a value if it's for freedom's sake. And that is an unacceptable liberty. So he says, Moha Voda Azos Lachem. So what do we say? Had he been there, he wouldn't have left. Ba'avorze, it's for these things. This is the whole tachlis, this is the whole reason that Hashem took me out. It was for these. Ba'avor she'akayim mitzvosa, Pesach, Matzah, and Morah. That's why Hashem took me out. But what about him, whoever he is? Ilu hayasham lo hayanigo. We say he wouldn't have been redeemed. How do we know that? Because he's not prepared to be redeemed. We don't say he wouldn't have left, because maybe he would. Leaving Egypt was entirely a function of whether you wish to leave. Dothan and Aviram also left. They're hardly of the holiest ilk, but they left. But they were never redeemed, because they never left heading towards anything higher. They just left heading towards just not being in Egypt. So ba'avorzeh plus betzeisi equals ge'ula. We can never say if he was there he wouldn't have left, because maybe he would. But it's clear currently, with this approach, lo haya nigel, he wouldn't have been part of the ge'ula. And that's a sad place to be. I mean, being in Egypt is sadder. But to have left, but not to have realized what it's all about, that is sad. Physically, tagged along with the Jewish people, but not part of Jewish destiny. And to bring us back, if we can wrap up, if you will pardon the expression, to Korech at the beginning of the Shir, the Maharal in the Sefer Gevuras Hashem in Perek Samach, he discusses the Matzah and Morah they put together with the Pesach. How close, right, but they are sandwiched together. What that means is from the time the Jewish people left Egypt and leaving Egypt to becoming servants of Hashem is represented by the Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach is Avoda. Va'avadatem es ha'avoda hazos. It's the Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach is active practice. We activated our status as Avdei Hashem while we were still in Egypt by doing the avoda of the Korban Pesach. An eved is oved. The avoda of the Pesach was our first eved experience. And it represents our new relationship with Hashem. That's the geula. Says Maharal, and nothing has changed in the last 500 years. As soon as one takes on and locks into a relationship with Hashem with the Korban Pesach, as we did, nothing is ever the same. And nothing is normal, that's for sure. There are two paths now that accompany the Pesach. One's called Matzah, and one's called Morah. Things are either outstandingly good, as represented by the Matzah, beyond everything. Everything happens quickly, everything happens wonderfully. Or Lo Aleinu Morah. But the unique nature of the Jewish people does not allow them to have a normal existence, and we never have. So sandwiched together with our relationship represented by Pesach are the two paths of Matzah and Maror. It's either one or the other. It's almost never in between. And if it is, it's only on the way from one to the other, very quickly. So these are the important lessons of the Korech, and important for us to ponder as we celebrate our freedom, rightly so. That's what the evening is about. But not only to celebrate what we call Yetzias Mitzrayim, but also to invest and rejuvenate our sense of Geulas Mitzrayim on this evening of light, this very special evening of Pesach. We'll leave it over there for this evening.